John, welcome to the Writer's Cove or the Writer's Coven, depending on your orientation to reality. And I assume for you, the cove is a much more comfortable word.
It's a great pleasure to see you again, Daniel Chacon. Thank you for inviting me.
It's been a lot of years. You know what my image is of you?
Okay, tell me.
This is going to sound weird, and I hope it doesn't sound creepy, but I've always had affection for you. Every time I saw you, I go, I want to get to know that guy.
Uh-huh.
And I would say to whomever I was with at the time, I don't even remember because it changed so often, I would say, I'm going to invite that guy over for dinner, him and his wife. I'm going to invite them over for dinner. And I never did. And then you left. You left. You got a better offer. Where are you now?
Well, I've been here at the University of Kansas for a decade.
A decade already.
Things are good. But I have to say, I really miss El Paso. It's my favorite place. And I feel like El Paso's home. So I was there for 11 years and really loved it. So there are trade-offs in life, and one of the big costs of moving here was not living in El Paso, Texas.
One of the things about working at an institution like University of Kansas, one of the great things about it is you get to research or work on what it is that you're passionate about. And it seems like just kind of a very brief overview of what you are writing and what you're producing, the conferences you're going. It has to do with technology and AI plays it. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing now?
Sure. So my interests at the moment are on the sort of the disruptive character of these emerging technologies like AI. In this case, we'll talk about large language models, I hope.
Yeah, we're going to talk about ChatGPT. That's what inspired this show. And so definitely.
Yeah. When we think about sort of core notions of, what it means to be human in the digital age, these are philosophical questions,
right?
Ultimately. When we think about how, for example, in my case, science has been changed by the ubiquity of computational tools, or how we think about, for example, issues of public policy around privacy, transparency, explainability. These are all features of the new world we're living in. Right? It's becoming more and more difficult to understand these opaque technologies. Some of them are intrinsically opaque,
but increasingly easy to use them.
Increasingly easy to use them, exactly.
Even if you don't understand them, they have become such a fundamental part of how we think and how we use our brain that we are part AI in a sense, right?
Yes. And so there is. Obviously, these are we could call them cognitive prosthetics, right? They're things that allow us to extend our capacities and
like our memory,
our memory. But of course, as ancient philosophers had pointed out, the ancient Greeks that these technologies are also come with a risk that they harm our memory also, right? So we all know how the damage that these technologies have done to us personally with respect to memory and attention. So there is a kind of prosthetic quality to a lot of this.
Right. Absolutely.
In many ways, these things will make us better. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we should be careful not to assume that this is our memory or our creative capacity or our ability, or that we're in a position of sort of overestimating our own capacities as we use these things.
Right.
That's an insight, for example, that Plato had offered us many years ago. So so it's a very traditional set of considerations.
Right.
It's philosophy. Yeah.
And the way this conversation began was with a post that you put on Facebook. We're Facebook friends, so we've kind of remained friends in a sense.
Yeah.
About how I guess you review a peer-reviewed philosophical journal, and you found
I do. Yeah.
And you found some of those submissions were using ChatGPT.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's really funny, right? So last summer, when I was playing around with some of these large language models, and we should probably say what that is and so on, but last summer I realized, well, you know, we are now at the point where this was May, June, July, where it would be pretty straightforward for these things to be presented to, for example, our students,
right,
in a way that would allow them effectively to respond to sort of standard, relatively low expectation essays in a writing intensive course, let's say in introduction to ethics, for example, where you might be asked a sort of standard set of questions like compare Kant and Hume on moral duty or something like that. And that these tools were good enough for students to generate, let's say, a B minus paper or a C plus paper. So they wouldn't be the most exciting or creative. They might be very formulaic, but they would hit expectations. And so I wrote a little bit about that. So there's a beautiful magazine called Return Magazine, I think it's called. It's a sort of a quasi-literary magazine on the effects of technology on you know, human nature and so on. And so those guys contacted me about writing something about this topic, which I did. And I really wasn't expecting that things would move as quickly as they did.
Right, right.
I think that piece came out at the end of July, I think. By October, ChatGPT, was it October or November? October or November, ChatGPT was available.
Right.
So I was talking about GPT and I was talking about things that were built on GPT. But this was ChatGPT, which is trivially easy to use.
Obviously, oh man, it is so easy.
Yeah.
You just put in what you want. You know, I for example, I put in, write a poem about quantum mechanics. And 30 seconds later, it had a poem about quantum mechanics that might frankly have been better than some of our students could have written. Right now, with all the input that people are putting, they're, you know, this is AI. It's modifying itself, and it's going to get better and better and better. So what's it going to be like in 10 years when I'm not a professor anymore? You know, how accurate will it be? I mean, you got to
You're asking me for a prediction?
No, I'm just, saying that, technology is so quickly advancing that I imagine it will threaten the college essay itself. And there's a brilliant thing that you said on Twitter. You said something really brilliant on Twitter. You said, it's like the calculator. You know, you said the calculator, when we first got access to the calculator, and I'm old enough to remember, math teachers were so frightened. It is the end of math.
Yeah.
But obviously that wasn't the case. And you kind of, can you talk about that comparison?
Sure. I think, you know, clearly, for example, we will still need our students to understand how to compose a paragraph, how to write a sentence, how to understand grammar. We'll need them to know the basics in the same way we still need mathematicians,
right? Exactly.
To know how to add.
I have a calculator, but I still don't know crap about math.
Okay. right. And, you know, obviously we wouldn't ever give anyone a graduate degree for capacity to do arithmetic, even at the highest levels, right? So the kind of skills that we value, let's say, in theoretical mathematics have to do with creativity, imagination, the ability to form connections, you know, the idea of, you know, contributing in a fruitful way to our understanding of mathematics. The kind of the core tool of, you know, or let's say the sort of the basics of writing will still be there. We'll still have to teach people to write at that basic level. But, you know, what we can recognize already since October is that these things, and your way of characterizing it was very precise, I think, that, you know, these things, these tools hit a kind of a baseline expectation for what a, let's say, a B minus level paper in an introductory philosophy class should look like.
Right.
They're grammatically correct. They're idiomatically whatever. They meet expectations in all kinds of ways. But in the same way that we wouldn't restrict what we care about in arithmetic, in mathematics, to arithmetic, we care about more than that right. in writing. So you know, I think it's almost like it'll take care of all of the routine, boring, formulaic writing tasks that that are part of kind of contemporary life, and they'll fade in the background. So administrators, right? College administrators, university administrators, all of the kinds of memos and messages and emails that you get from them, those can be effectively generated by an AI.
Right.
So, you know, if you want to write a rejection letter, if you want to write a letter in support.
Oh, rejection letters. That's great. Because like in literary magazines, we write a lot of rejection letters. Let the AI do it.
The AI can do it. I think at this point, smart people around the world have ChatGPT open on their desktop all the time to do these kinds of tasks.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to say that again. Smart people today have ChatGPT opened on their device. Yeah, that's interesting. Because you know,
and it's sort of like write me a memo welcoming the graduate students for the new semester. Wow. I mean, if you want to do that, you've got it. Now, the thing is, we will soon become accustomed to that kind of routine production.
Right.
We'll notice things. We'll notice the opening and closing formulas that ChatGPT uses, right? We'll notice the kind of bland, kind of HR-driven, administrative language, the tone.
Yeah, it could so permeate the landscape that it becomes like the voice of Siri or the voice of Alexa.
Precisely. And then that'll be good because then, you know, quirky, let's say interesting, creative, maybe error riddled.
Yeah.
Emails will become much more valuable, right? So
you know what's interesting right now? One of the things that I think is a lot of academics are just, you know, they're like afraid of this, the same way they were, the math teachers were afraid of the calculator. Exactly. You know, what's it going to mean to the essay? But I think they really are missing the point.
Exactly.
Because I think the more important issue is, how is the new model, what new model is emerging and how do you adapt to it? You are listening to A Conversation in the Writer's Cove. If you want to hear the extended version of this, you can go to wordsonawire.org or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Now let's get back to the conversation.
Definitely. I totally agree. I mean, I think this idea, the first reaction, and it was very disturbing, was a kind of policing reaction.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, academics were kind of locked into the way they run a writing intensive class. And they're like, oh, I'm going to have to,
what am I going to do? Oh, no, we're going to be, you know, what we're like. We're like those cashiers at Albertsons who are replaced by, self-checkout. That's what teachers of comp are.
Yeah. But notice it's suddenly changed the game in a way that I think will be salutary. So I think it's kind of getting rid of that robotic style of writing that we're all kind of tuned into from high school onwards, that, you know, the way to write a memo is this way. The way to write a philosophical article is this way.
Right.
And we, in a way, wrote to an algorithm. We were kind of writing robotically.
Right, yeah. We speak in algorithms. We make choices in algorithms.
Clichés, you know, cliched phrases, attempts to pander, meeting expectations, looking good, saying things in the right way, all this kind of thing that ultimately now machines can do that. So what good are you?
Yeah. Right? You know, and the thing is that, okay, so let's say that we really had a narrow view of this and we, you know, we're a a teacher of composition or a teacher, you know, at a university or a college or even a high school, and we're saying, you know, our students are going to cheat. Not like they haven't been doing it before. That problem has been solved already. And the first prototype is, I don't know the name of it, but it's this 22-year-old at Yale. His name is Edward Tian. And he wrote a code, an AI system that can take a ChatGPT essay and analyze it and tell you the likelihood that it was generated by AI. And it's pretty accurate.
I hate to tell you, that's already been defeated. So
let me finish though, because I'm sure it'll be defeated and there'll be better models. It's a first model and it's by a 22-year-old kid. So give him a break. I mean, what's he going to be doing in 5 years, right?
I'm happy to give him a break.
No, I didn't mean that in an aggressive sort of way, John. What I mean is that the irony is that he used ChatGPT in order to be able to write this code. And this is in response after 2 months of this being available. And so even if that, you know, if there's software or some sort of AI that is overriding that, the model like that is going to get better and better. So definitely, that there probably might be an elimination of cheating itself. Because But I think one of the components that we might have to think about in terms of, you know, I'm a creative writer, you're a philosopher, our students, our undergraduates write essays, is perhaps shifting the use of language, not just to the written form, but to the conversational form.
Yeah.
Because perhaps conversation is going to be more relevant to their success and their processing of information and you know, their careers than the written work, because the written work, you can just press a button, but conversation, you can't use AI.
Right. Yes, exactly. I think that's one way we could do it. That's going to force us to rethink mass education.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
You know, when I was at UTEP, in our intro to philosophy class, we had 600 students.
600, wow.
Yeah.
600 philosophy students on the border of El Paso and Juarez. I love it.
Yeah, it was beautiful. But the realities of mass education don't necessarily lend themselves to this kind of Oxbridge tutorial conversational style.
Right.
I think that would be great. Everyone deserves that, right? I mean, it would be great to have that accessible, but I mean, we've got some real social and political questions coming down the pipe here as to, you know, what does an education look like?
Right, right.
So what is the value added of the, you know, an interaction with someone like you or me? And it has to be something beyond just meeting those basic expectations of being able to produce a formulaic piece of writing for some corporate purpose. I mean, we have to go beyond that.
I'm thinking what you're reminding me of is this article. I think you posted it on your Twitter or on your Facebook. And so remind me, because I don't, you know, I'm just vaguely remembering it, about how this kind of technology is going to be a threat to humanities itself. As a discipline, are you the one that posted that one?
I'm not sure. I have to say, I disagree with that. I think in many ways that the humanities are more central than ever.
Right.
I think it's that's what's going to distinguish, you know, a good education from, let's say, a technical education or a vocational education, let's say, or whatever. I mean, if you are learning to code in 2023, if you're sitting at home studying the latest computer language, you might be in trouble. You're probably more threatened than your poet living next door.
But on the other hand, to recreate a new model where humanities isn't one of the pillars of the university experience doesn't mean you're going to eliminate that which is important to the humanities: ethics, philosophy, creativity. I mean, they would find a way to put those components in. I'm thinking about our university and the discussion that's currently going on about eliminating tenure and how that discussion, you know, might be a little bit more relevant or lively in the next 10, 20 years as we begin to, you know, evaluate, you know, traditional professorships, the traditional relationship between professor and student, and move towards a more digitally constructed or directed institution, which is all about efficiency and code. And right now, even in our humanities, we have to put in statistics about how many students have joined, how we've grew. I mean, there's all these this data that we're forced to keep now. And, you know, it's increasingly becoming about numbers. And it just seems like there might be a completely different model of post-secondary education, and it may not include the part creative writers like me or, you know, literature professors like me. You know,
I'd make the opposite prediction. I would say that you know, you don't see anyone in the math department teaching arithmetic,
right?
So it's going to be the creative, critical, imaginative voices that stand.
Right, but those voices aren't necessarily going to be written anymore, is what I'm saying. They're going to be digital. In fact, I believe that even in poetry and creative writing, within the next 10 years, I mean, it's already happening all over the place, but in the next 10 years, the digital component is going to be fundamental to the art.
Mm.
It's not just going to be a book anymore. It's going to be some sort of digital element to the art itself. You know what I did with my undergraduate creative writing students? These are seniors in the senior seminar. They're graduating. I had them use ChatGPT to put in the idea of a story, the style, you know, whatever they want, and then to take it and revise the hell out of it and make it a beautiful work of art.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen the results yet, but I imagine there'll be some good ones. And I think that collaboration with the digital world that, you know, is probably going to become more and more fundamental to how we express art.
Absolutely. But notice, so for example, I did something almost identical semester in the graduate seminar,
uh-huh.
where I had my students co-author with ChatGPT. Don't want to be policing our students as a kind of educational model. And we want to enable them to use these things. I mean, they are going to be, they are already a reality in their presence.
Right.
So how does one critically and, let's say, in a sophisticated way, use these tools? So I tried to do that with them, and I had them handwrite, actually, in a journal, their experience of co-writing with the AI.
Oh, handwriting. I love that. Brilliant.
Yeah. And so eventually they started saying to me, you know, the ChatGPT is great, but it isn't getting me where I need to be in terms of any kind of creative or useful actual work. And I think what we're going to see is that, you know, that critical capacity of saying, okay, well, what is it? We could put it back in terms of grades. It's B minus level work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's then going to have to go down.
So
that B minus is going to have to be like a C,
right?
Or a C minus, right? And we're going to be looking for an extra something. And that extra something, whether it's in your case, beautiful writing or edifying prose or or in our case, sort of genuinely creative philosophy or argument, that's the extra something that we bring to the table.
Right.
And we want people to be in a position to engage critically with the output of these systems. So remember that these systems, I mean, what is a large language model, right? A large language model is effectively an abstract object, like the number 7. Now, what it is a probability distribution over sequences of words in a corpus. So the corpus in question, the body, the data set in question, is everything written on the internet. I'm oversimplifying a little bit, but basically Common Crawl generates a corpus of everything written on the internet. And then from that, the model learns the probability of sequences of sentences or sequences of words appearing together in sort of finite strings. What it does at the end is it is itself a representation of the likelihood of different sequences of words appearing together. That's right, all right. It is. Right. Now, it's not all the, I mean, obviously right. It's an incredible technical achievement and the folks at OpenAI are geniuses. So not taking anything away from them. But the point is, it's a system for meeting expectations. Right. It's a system for telling you how likely it is that this sentence will appear.
Right.
That's all it is. Now, what we want to do as educated people is be critical in relation to those expectations.
Right. That's a good point.
To respond to that. So, you know, one thing I'm really enthusiastic about is the disappearance of that kind of formulaic language that we get from university administrators. Right. Let's say there's some horrible tragedy. Right.
Oh yeah, you can anticipate the letter. The
you anticipate precisely the email that you're going to get after the horrible tragedy. Right. That if that's the case, if you know what email you're going to get ahead of time, that's the kind of thing an AI can do. Then you ask, you know, does this dean really deserve $250,000 a year for producing this kind of work?
Right.
And then we rethink. So it's funny because I don't think it's going to affect people like you. I think it's going to affect...
Oh, I think it's already affected people like me. And I don't mean just ChatGPT, but I mean the fact that I am part AI. I am part digital.
And oh, no, I meant your professional status.
Yeah.
Your market value.
I see. We're talking about my market value.
Your market value will increase.
Yeah, no, well, I'm going to be here until I die because I'm tenured and I'm almost retired. Right.
Well,
but I think for the younger generation, it's increasingly harder to get jobs like we have. I mean, increasingly harder every decade. And I think that because there's going to be such a high demand for it, there's going to the system, which is based on numbers and all these different codes to measure efficiency, is going to probably end up outsourcing a lot of what we do to digital delivery systems or those who run the delivery systems.
I will disagree with
that. That's okay.
I think the people who will lose their jobs are the people whose jobs are the most robotic. Mm-hmm. Our jobs are essentially about human interaction. Embodied interaction, right? You said conversation. I would agree. But it's also sort of, you know, critical engagement with a student's work, you know, getting in there with the red pen and really helping the student turn this into something beautiful.
Right. But see, the model that we're basing this on is based on the university system. But I think a lot of the colleges and universities are more trade schools, really, in terms of what their ultimate goals for their local students are. And I don't, but yet those in humanity still have the same model. And I think that model is...
I think it's the vocational model that's going to collapse, not the model of traditional education.
Wow, that's interesting.
What's going to collapse is vocationalism. Mm-hmm. It's a waste. I'm exaggerating a little bit. I'm deeply invested in computer science and theoretical computer science. But frankly, if your computer science degree is learning to code, you're wasting your time.
I'm Daniel Chacon. Thank you for joining us in this conversation about ChatGPT and the future of creative writing. I'd like to thank the writers in the Cove, Will Rose, my ex-student. Thank you, Will.
Yeah, that was an exciting conversation.
And Facundo Torrieri. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Daniel. Very interesting program.
If you want to hear the entire conversation, and we get into some interesting topics such as simulation theory and just all kinds of things about tech and how it might affect the future of academia and the future of liberal arts, listen on wordsonawire.org or wherever you hear your podcasts. We are Words on a Wire.